All right, we've got another episode of the Western Slam BHA podcast series coming up. And today's episode is with the Wyoming chapter. I sit down and spoke with Jeff Muratore, and he's one of the co-chairs for the chapter. Real knowledgeable guy. I was excited about the podcast, so real insightful. There's a lot of stuff going on in Wyoming that you kind of don't hear about until you talk to somebody that knows. So, but aside from that, we got a couple of ads to get out of the way. Wilderness Athlete has been a running partner with Muley Freak for quite a while. And, I mean, I've said it in previous ads, I've said it in previous episodes, we're knee-deep in summer scouting right now. And it's time to get your supplements, it's time to get your hydrate and recover, it's time to get your energy and focus. Grab that stuff, throw it into your cart, online, and enter the code MF10 when you go to checkout, and that'll knock 10% off your cart price. You guys, I mean, this kind of stuff, especially in the hot weather, when you when you don't want to drink just plain water, and when you're actually feeling drained and feeling like you need to rehydrate, it's priceless. It comes in handy. Also, the other tool that everybody here at Muley Freak uses, I mean, it's indispensable at this point, is Onyx Maps. And we have a 20% discount code with them. When you go to checkout, entering MF20 will get you 20% off your cart price. No matter what you're checking out with, 20% right off the top. Also, if you're in Utah, specifically around the Salt Lake City area, I mean, hell, if you're even within a couple hours drive, I would invite you to come to the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers after party that will be happening Saturday, July 14th. It'll be happening after Total Archery Challenge. So if you already have your tickets for Total Archery Challenge and you're going to go shoot that day, plan on adding a couple hours to your day and make your way down to Snowbird and at the lodge, and we will be having the party, the after party. There'll be raffles, there're going to be giveaways, there're going to be all sorts of stuff. They're going to be giving away a ton of prizes. It seems like over the last couple weeks, my Instagram feed's just been flooded with all sorts of stuff that they're getting for giveaway and for the raffle. So also, if you go to the after party and you buy the Backcountry, well, your entry fee to the after party is a BHA membership, a year-long membership. Also, you get a Yeti tumbler. So you're essentially getting a free tumbler with your BHA membership, and you get to join the after party, join the raffle, get tickets to win good stuff. So if you're planning on doing that, July 14th, 4:30 to 9:30, plan on being there, and enjoy. You're dialed in to another episode of the Muley Freak Podcast.
And of course, they wanted to know what we wanted to talk about. So I was up front with them and told them we need to discuss cultivated lands and land closures surrounding those fields. Because at the present time, if it was 120 acres and only 20 of it was cultivated, they closed the whole parcel.
The rest of the 100 were off limits.
Right.
Interesting.
Unscripted, real conversations about everything to do with Western big game hunting.
We're not just doing surveys about what people think. Hopefully, they're doing some research.
Yeah.
And maybe future hunter surveys will ask, did you shoot it with a compound, a recurve, or a crossbow?
Yeah.
Let's find out. Let's see what's going on.
Tips and tactics, opinions, where we've been, where we're going. Here's this week's episode.
Jeff, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, Jeff Muratore, if you're from the BHA chapter of Wyoming, if you wouldn't mind giving a little introduction as far as what you do for the state chapter and as far as what your role is within the chapter.
Okay. My name is Jeff Muratore. Live in Casper, Wyoming. I am board co-chair for the Wyoming chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Basically, probably the most that I do with the group is I keep on legislative issues, game and fish issues. Now that we have a coordinator for the state, we don't have to do as much with the events, the meet and greets and brew fests and all that stuff. But so, yeah, I spend my time going through all the paperwork and online with the issues with public land, new bills, regulations, that type of thing.
Okay. How much of your position as co-chair involves really researching and getting to know the subject prior to really taking it to the chapter and informing the chapter of what's going on?
Oh, you know, I've done this for such a long time, stayed on top of things as far as statewide issues go. It's almost second nature. I hate to say that, but I have so many links for interim committee meetings, game and fish, legislative issues, that type of thing. So, and then there's always those troubled areas where you just got to keep going back to every 2 to 4 weeks and checking, seeing that nothing crazy is going on. And I'll tell you what, more than once, we have found some major issues just by going in and looking at, say, state land transactions.
Really?
Pending transactions, yeah. So in the past, it was really difficult to do online because of the way they had the website set up. But now, thanks to several meetings we've had with them, it's easier to navigate through there and find out what they're doing, because that process doesn't always get out to the public like it should.
That's interesting.
When they do a land transaction?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, when they do a land transaction, it goes through several steps in the process. And in the preliminary steps, it's easy to see what's going on. And so we can get with the state land office, talk to them and say, hey, look, this isn't going to work. I mean, there's going to be a problem here with access to public land. We're going to lose access to X number of acres, so on and so forth. So it's easier to get things done at that point in that stage of the process rather than after they do a detailed analysis, go through spending thousands of dollars and getting a detailed analysis and then start putting it in front of the public. And at that point, it's really difficult to change things. And then you end up in a battle to either, you know, to defeat it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change it anymore. So it's critical when you get in to the process, what stage of it you get in there.
That's interesting. So when it came to the website changes that you mentioned, and making things a little bit more transparent to just the general public, was there a certain party that was involved in spearheading that, saying, hey, we've got an issue with your website, we need to change it to this? Was it solely one organization, or was it kind of a broad effort by just a lot of people wanting to see what's going on?
Well, I can recall the actual visit where I went down to Cheyenne and met with the new state land board director and the director of the state land office, I should say. And at that meeting, I was accompanied by a gentleman by the name of Mike Porter, and he's more involved with Wild Sheep Foundation.
Okay.
And we're friends. We both live in Casper. And at the time, we were both representatives of groups in the Wyoming Sportsman's Alliance. And, you know, that's just the public land issue is so big with BHA. When the directors changed, you know, the first thing in my mind was we need to get down there, meet this new director, sit down, have a talk, and discuss some issues. And, I mean, she asked us, what can we do? And I said, you can make it easier for us to see when you have pending transactions.
And how was that received?
Well,
good.
Yeah. And they definitely are easier to see and find. And consequently, if we can see a pending transaction before they have a detailed analysis done, a lot of times we can get in there and make changes, or as in some cases, put a stop to it.
Wow.
So
that really just boils down to, you know, these organizations, the Wyoming Sportsman's Alliance, having the right people in place like you and members from the national, or the, the Sheep Foundation guy?
Mike Porter.
So just having people like you and Mike Porter in place that are able to recognize when there's a change of director, we need to get in there and spearhead a couple issues right off the bat. I mean, that doesn't happen if these organizations don't have the right people in place. So hats off to you guys. That's awesome.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, now, if I was to have a meeting down there, it would probably be with Buzz Hedick. Buzz is our chapter board chair, and he lives in Laramie. So recently we had an issue where a lot of members were asking us, why is the state land closed, and sending pictures of us to us of signs closed for, you know, state lands closed for resource protection, state lands closed for cultivated lands, all kinds of different things, different signs, different places.
Interesting.
And if you get on the they have an interactive map that you can get on there and see what state lands are open to the general public, what state lands are closed. And we noticed that there were a lot of red means you can't go, it's closed.
Okay.
And there was a lot of red land with public roads through it and that kind of thing. And so it didn't take long for us to realize that within these parcels were cultivated fields. And on state land, when there's a cultivated field, there's a rule that doesn't allow hunting and fishing.
Interesting.
Now, you could bird watch, you can walk your dog, you can go in there and hike, but you can't go in there and hunt and fish. It's kind of an odd situation.
Really?
So Buzz and I made arrangements to have a meet down there. And of course, they wanted to know what we wanted to talk about. So I was up front with them and told them we need to discuss cultivated lands and land closures surrounding those fields, because at the present time, if it was 120 acres and only 20 of it was cultivated, they closed the whole parcel.
The rest of the 100 were off limits.
Right.
Interesting.
And so we made the trip there and walked in the meeting room. Two real nice guys, very accommodating, knowledgeable fellas. And first thing they did was show us the interactive map and how they had changed it to where only the cultivated field was closed now.
That quick?
That quick. I mean, that...
Wow.
So... one trip to Cheyenne, and we opened thousands of acres of public land.
And you hardly even had to talk to anybody.
So,
wow, that's so a success story. That's a political success story if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, it was amazing, actually. So Buzz and I said, well, we're down here, so why can't we hunt and fish on those cultivated lands, especially in the fall when the crops have been harvested and walking on that wouldn't have any effect to it.
Exactly.
And so at that point, we began the process of looking into changing that rule. And, of course, we got an election year coming up. Our governor is termed out. And in Wyoming, the land board consists of the top five elected officials.
Okay.
And... of course, and they're led by the governor, who's the president of the commission. And, you know, we felt that maybe the best way to handle this situation now is to wait for the next governor. And he's going to be new. He's going to be new in office. He's going to be in a four-year term, which will give us adequate time to start the discussion and see if we can get that rule change either modified or struck out completely. So that's what we got coming up.
That's a great strategy. I mean, not knowing the governor and how he would react to that kind of thing, I can only imagine that something like that would not be, it would take a few years of implementation, I would think. And that's smart on your guys' part to know when to swing the bat, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So we're looking forward to that one. And I think we have a lot in our favor based upon that only hunters and fishermen are being discriminated against in that rule.
And, yeah, that's true. I mean, if it was closed off to everybody and anybody, then I could see, you know, well, there must be farther reaching reasons to close that off. But where it's kind of narrowed down to fishermen and sportsmen hunters, that's a very narrow definition, and there's got to be a reason behind it, and knowing what the reason is the first step to getting it changed.
Right. You know, you can speculate, but I'm sure, you know, decades ago when they implemented that, it may have had a lot to do with the lessee, the whoever it was in ag, and they didn't want anybody on those fields, especially while the crop is growing or while they're harvesting it. And that's totally understandable.
Yeah, definitely.
And we would not push for access to that ground while that's going on. What we would do is we would push for access to it once the crop has been harvested.
Which is reasonable, by anybody's measure.
Right. I mean, there's going to be no damage done to it. Anything walking on it or so forth. So that's something that's definitely pretty high on our list right now as far as, political battles or, you know, hopes that, you know, we can get some more land opened up for hunters and fishermen. Because sometimes there's water, especially, a lot of cultivated fields are right along creek bottoms, rivers. So there's water nearby, so it affects the fishermen too, not being able to access some of that land where they could get in there and fish and so forth.
Right.
So
that's interesting. And really, I mean, I'm sure there's other sportsmen from other states, you know, outside of Wyoming that are hearing your success stories when it comes to going down and talking to somebody in office and having the, you know, things swing your way so easily. I'm sure they're like, oh, come on, that ain't even fair. But at the same time, I mean, do you guys feel, a sense of almost like we've been given it so easily that we need to now, you know, represent and take care of it? Since the hunters and fishers were the ones that were excluded at one point, now it's the hunters and fishers that might have some sort of a magnifying lens over top of you, kind of watching a little bit more closely to make sure that you guys are toeing the line. Is that, I mean, does that ever cross your mind?
Oh, for sure. And you know, this really all goes back, probably 15 years ago when, a local landowner here in the Casper area, petitioned the state land office to do a land exchange with him. And he's a non-resident landowner, which has changed the landscape in Wyoming quite a bit. As these old-time, long-time ranches have been sold, most of them have gone to very wealthy non-resident landowners, and they want exclusive hunting rights on them, obviously. So traditional ranches
or no hunting at all.
Or no hunting at all. And traditional ranches that allowed hunting now are off limits. And this particular landowner has quite a bit of state land on his ranch. And so he wanted to do some swapping. Well, it didn't take long to figure out that What he wanted to swap for was going to basically give him a elk hunting season refuge.
Oh, man.
And I was pretty green behind the ears back then. And I got hooked up with a local house representative by the name of Mike Gilmore. And Mike taught me a lot of things about the state land office and how to approach these issues. And we had quite a battle over this land exchange and came out winners in the end. And I think those were the days when I was starting to get to know people down in Cheyenne, people who, well, the state auditor from Casper, and I got to know her. She's one of the land board commissioners. And so during that process, I think, as people recognize you, they see what you've done in the past. When you want to meet with them, I think they pay more attention.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that definitely does help. And, you know, it would be, I have a fear that meeting might've gone a little bit differently if you had only been, you know, part of the BHA chair and chairmanship for a year or two. You know, they might not, who's this guy and what's he want to talk about and what's BHA and what are they doing here? And
Well, as a matter of fact, they still are kind of asking about what's BHA. And, you know, they may know the faces, but BHA is relatively new in Wyoming.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up this being a battle of 15 years old. I guess you're right. I mean, BHA hasn't been around near that long, so you've had years to establish yourself and then being able to align yourself with a new organization such as BHA. How's that gone for you?
Oh, I mean, for years and years, I looked for a group that I could identify with.
Yeah.
And when I was introduced to BHA by Buzz Hedick, you know, I started seeing, you know, this is different. This isn't the same old thing. I mean, these guys are proud that they're hunters. They're, we're conservationists. Yeah, we want to access public land, but we're hunters too. We fish, we hunt, and we're not ashamed of it. And I thought, this is a group I can identify with.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I stood up in front of an interim legislative committee to testify about commission authority for revenue. And they asked me, well, how many members do you have? And I said, honestly, we're relatively new. We're just around the 100 member mark right now, 100 members.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we broke 1,000. So, you know, things have and that's just in a few years.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this, but in 2017 at the rendezvous in Missoula, Wyoming was named Chapter of the Year.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That was a really proud moment. You know, for Buzz and I and a couple other board members that were up there attending the rendezvous, we didn't see it coming, although we had some pretty big victories up to that point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, saving access to 4,200 acres of land in a prime elk area, you know, helping with eliminating aircraft and drones from being used for spotting and locating game for hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd have some really big victories. And I guess we probably definitely needed to be on the list of who might get that award.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's exciting. I did not know that about, you know, Chapter of the Year. And speaking of those victories, how much of that came from just wanting to get ahead of the curve, especially for the drone issue and the aircraft issue, because relatively speaking, that's new technology. And I feel like Wyoming was one of the first states to kind of get ahead of the ball and say, no, we cannot use this for, you know, spotting of game or locating of game or moving of game. How much of your guys' impact was used during that legislation to help pass those laws?
Well, honestly, Buzz and I were working side by side with the Game and Fish to get that regulation through.
Okay. BHA
took the bull by the horn, so to speak, with the drone issue. And not in just Wyoming, but in other states.
Yeah.
And they, I believe they, there's legislation passed in several states. And Tim Brass wanted our chapter in Wyoming to pursue the drone legislation. So we did. And the first year, I wasn't a member at that time, which doesn't mean anything, but I remember BHA pushing the drone issue, and guys were already flying planes and legally scouting big game animals. The only thing that you had to do was wait 24 hours after the flight.
Interesting.
And so the drone guys were saying, you're going to ban me from using my drone, but you're going to let those guys fly their airplanes.
The valid argument.
That really,
I mean, you're, you know,
caught my attention.
Yeah.
And so I went to Buzz and I said, you know, I've looked at state statute on flying planes, and I don't believe it's legal to spot and locate game from an airplane. And I think the regulation is wrong. And so we looked over it. I got with the wildlife coordinator on the regulations, and at first it was really tough trying to beat it through his head that, hey, look, I don't think it's legal to use planes. You guys have made it legal by adding the wording 24 hours on there, and I think we, you know, let's do planes and drones at the same time.
Yeah.
And it took almost 2 years because they were really hesitant to stop something that was already being allowed.
Yeah, that's more difficult when you're already fighting against something that was already, you know, part of habit at that point.
Right. But every year there were more and more complaints about hunts being ruined by airplanes dropping in low to see what the game was. I mean,
yeah.
Actually, during hunting season, we had one fella that had cashed in, I don't know how many preference points to get a sheep tag, came to Wyoming from Montana, scouted out some sheep, and he was actually stalking his ram, and a plane came around, buzzed, circled over him, and blew him out of there.
Oh, man.
He actually wrote a great letter to the commissioners, you know, in support of the proposed regulation to eliminate aircraft of all kinds, not just drones.
Yeah.
But we got it passed. It made it through. And everybody tells me that hunts the high country, man, you hardly ever see anything in the sky anymore.
Wow.
And that's awesome.
That is awesome. That's awesome that, I mean, it's sad that it was so noticeable at one point, but that's awesome that you guys, like I said, fighting against an established law or something that's already, you know, been cemented in as part of the hunting strategy is not easy. So that says a lot about, you know, the willingness of the legislators to kind of hear both sides and settle with reason. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what really, really got me in this deal was I had taken a buddy out with his son. His son was 12 years old, first-time hunter, and he had a cow elk tag.
Mm-hmm.
And it was late season and we had found some elk and we were stalking these elk so we could get this young kid on his first elk.
Mm-hmm.
And a plane came over and blew him out of there. And I was so discouraged. You know, we tried not to show it real hard, you know, because of the
yeah,
boy, but,
yeah.
You know, I thought, this just isn't right. You know, it's just, you know, why in the late cow season is somebody buzzing a herd of elk? I mean, if he wants their location, he can see that from plenty high.
Yeah,
but this guy got low enough and he blew him out of there.
Oh, so, man.
But
that's you know, it's sad that that happens, but it's good that you had a personal conviction of it at that time as well. I mean, it gave you, you know, fuel for the fire at that point when you went to the table and said, hey, we got to get rid of this.
Yeah.
That's, wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, and I, you know, and Buzz was instrumental. He fought tooth and nail. Right before the commission meeting, about 3 weeks before the commission meeting, the Game and Fish Department got cold feet.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, we had gone through this year and a half process of getting it written out, making sure that it was okay through the Legislative Services Office, which is the lawyers, and then getting it out in meetings so people knew it was coming. I mean, they wanted to make sure everybody knew they were going to go after this regulation change.
Yeah.
And they got cold feet about 3 weeks before the commission meeting because of a landowner, you know, claimed that if he goes and looks for his cows and sees elk, that he's going to be breaking the law. And they said, no, the intent, that's not the intent of this law.
Yeah.
And so they changed it to a 10-day waiting period. And, well,
I mean, that's a good compromise, but then again, that all but eliminates it at that point. I mean, 10 days doesn't do you much for a migrating herd of cow elk.
No, but it still allows preseason scouting in the high country for sheep, trophy mule deer bucks, which generally stay in the same area.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And basically, because we had change the definition of aircraft to include drones, it would actually make drones legal to use after, you know, with a 10-day waiting period.
With 10 days as well, yeah.
And so, you know, Buzz and I both told him, we will not support this. This is wrong.
You know what? That's
we
good.
Need to stick by... Yeah.
That's good, because any leeway at that point, I mean, who's to say if there's a 10-day waiting period now, who's to say 10 years down the road that somebody doesn't come in and say, well, how about 5 days? I mean, come on now. What's five, right. You know? And right. Then it just gets chewed back down to 24 hours and we're back at square one.
I remember, you know, they finally relented and said, okay, we'll put it all in on this one and we'll see what the commissioners do. And the commissioners voted unanimously for it.
Wow. I didn't think about that. I mean, I guess at first I thought it was a compromise, but then again, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, ugh, that's a slippery slope.
It would have just, you know, if you still allow them in the air to look, then you're still going to have those problems.
Yeah.
We were convinced that the only way to stop this was a complete ban.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, it has made things so much better. I ask specific people that I know that hunt in those situations, where it, up in Cody, late season bull elk hunting, They were having, people were flying, finding these big bulls and then calling clients and saying, get here, I got a big one found.
Oh,
and then the next day going after that bull. And there are quite a few locals up in that area were frustrated. Too much pressure on the big bulls. The ethics involved in what was going on.
Yeah.
That stuff is over. You're going to have those extreme cases where somebody's going to violate the regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to prove it. But I definitely know numbers on planes have been called in and game wardens are following through. You know, whether a ticket's written or not, those pilots know they're being seen from the ground.
Oh, yeah. Almost everybody on the ground nowadays has got, you know, hundreds if not thousands of dollars worth of glass on them too. So it's not like they can't see you.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how our commission here deals with new technology, because they're doing a public survey now. And it's about a lot of different things. It's about, game tracking scopes, game cameras, crossbows, all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how far they go. But one thing I know, I want them to make sure that you know, right now we have a special archery season that runs the month of September. Uh-huh. And in our bow season in Wyoming, you can use a crossbow. And I know it's a, you know, it's an issue that gets a lot of people going.
Uh-huh.
Is, you know, but we have done it here for 40 years. What does it do to bow season? Does it, how does it affect the harvest? Is it a problem? You know, let's answer those questions first before we start changing things.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people that take to the field in September with a crossbow for whatever reason. And if we're going to eliminate that, let's make sure we do it for the right reasons.
Yeah. That's a very educated approach to it, to look at the data first and at least know if so many animals are harvested, then to know with what, with which weapon they were harvested and you know, what kind of impact they're going to have. Because if it comes out to be about 50-50, which I don't know if it would, or I don't know if it would not, but if it does come out to be 50-50, then, you know, there's your answer. It won't really affect anything. But if it comes out, you know, 70-30, 80-20, then you're, you know, it's a real eye opener that, that getting rid of crossbows is going to have a larger effect on harvest of these animals, and we got to reconsider things. Like you say, there's a lot of emotions involved, and there's a lot of opinions on it. That guys have never used a crossbow, therefore they have a certain view of it, and guys that have only used crossbows, and therefore they're emotionally attached to it. But just trying to steer clear of people's emotions and just saying, hey, here's the numbers, and we need to go this direction or this direction is, I mean, I don't think anybody could argue that that's the smart way to go.
That's right. And so hopefully we're not just doing surveys about what people think. Hopefully they're doing some research.
Yeah.
And maybe future hunter surveys will ask, did you shoot it with a compound, a recurve, or a crossbow?
Yeah.
Let's find out. Let's see what's going on. I've already looked into the numbers in the special archery season, and the kill ratios are relatively low.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been much change. However, that being said, the new technologies with not only crossbows but with compound bows, guys are shooting a lot further than they used to.
A lot further, a lot more accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a lot more lethal kill shots, and yeah, it is changing, and we are going to see those changes in the data, in the harvest data for sure.
Yeah. You know, so I, you know, myself, I prefer to archery hunt with a bow.
Mm-hmm.
I have used a crossbow. Back in my softball playing days, I got hurt really bad one year, and I couldn't draw my bow back, and I had a really good elk tag, and I didn't want to miss bow season. So I tried the compound. I did not harvest one. And what I learned was...
The crossbow, you mean? You did try the crossbow?
Right.
Okay.
I used a crossbow that year. I didn't harvest an elk in the archery season with a crossbow. But I learned packing one around is not fun. They are a pain in the butt.
A lot of guys would say, good, I hope it's heavy.
Yeah, well, it's just... it's so much easier to carry these newer, lightweight, smaller compounds.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they're so much easier to carry. And I enjoy shooting them more, too.
They are, yeah.
But, you know, I don't think we can rush into anything here in Wyoming on this issue yet until we find out a lot more.
Yep.
You know, we need to know a lot more.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. So as far as the Wyoming chapter itself, you mentioned that you guys have grown quite a bit over the last few years in membership.
Mm-hmm.
With Wyoming being such a, I mean, relatively dispersed state, do you guys have some sort of a, you know, a center of operations, whether it's on purpose or by accident, that you kind of see the majority of your members, or is it kind of just a population thing, or are you, you know, what are you guys seeing as far as your coverage throughout the state?
Well, you know, we do have some populated areas scattered across Wyoming, you know, Jackson area, Rock Springs, Green River, Cheyenne, Laramie, Casper, Gillette, Sheridan, Buffalo, Cody. Mm-hmm. And we have managed to get, I think at this point, we may have a board member out of all those areas now.
Really?
And yeah, because just exactly what you said is about how Wyoming is set up. It's hard for us to communicate. And, you know, guys in Jackson are wanting to have a meet and greet or, you know, something. And it's difficult to arrange that from Casper.
Yeah, true.
But we also just got a coordinator. Up until the just recent past, we've been an all-volunteer chapter, and now we have a coordinator. Although he does do Colorado and Wyoming, he's there to help get everything going. So if somebody in Gillette wants to have an event there, he can work with them. And it's really tough for guys like me and Casper to try to help them out in Green River or Cody or Gillette, wherever.
Yeah.
So this will work out a lot better.
Yeah. Is that Brian?
Brian.
Brian Webster?
Yep. Brian Webster.
That's funny. When we did our BHA episode for Colorado, I talked to him and Adam Gall about what they've got going down in Colorado. And I loved their National Forest organization, how they were able to kind of scatter people around to the National Forest that they live near to. We talked quite a bit about that within Colorado anyway. And I thought that was a great idea for Colorado. And to see that he's taken that same kind of coordination and implemented it into the Wyoming strategy is pretty, I mean, he's obviously good at what he does if they got him over two states, right?
Yeah.
That's good.
No, he's going to be pretty busy.
I bet.
And I spoke with him this morning. We had an event in Lander over the weekend, and I spoke with him this morning about that event and how it went, and he mentioned the podcast with you.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely been, you know, successful for us to have all the Western states involved in this podcast series, and you know, we've gotten pretty good feedback on each individual state, and the level of interest is exciting, and it's always good to see all of the states in general. Every one of these podcasts we've done have reported that they're growing. You know, I've yet to do a podcast where the chapter's like, oh, you know, we've stayed pretty stagnant. No, that's not the case. You know, each individual chapter is definitely growing at a great pace. And you can see that too. I mean, we've had plenty of successes in all of these Western states with issues from, you know, headwater issues to stream access, to like your guys' issue there with state lands, to wilderness designations. I mean, every state has got their individual battles, but to see that they're being backed by a growing membership in each chapter is very motivating. It's exciting to be a part of.
And I'll have to admit, probably one of the biggest issues that has grown our membership in Wyoming is land transfer.
Oh, I bet. That's easy. It's easy to get excited about that, and excited in a way that's like, hey, we can't let this slip. This is a major issue, and if we sleep on it, our lands are getting sold out from underneath our feet. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
And
there was a couple of years in a row where there were bills in the Wyoming legislature pertaining to land transfer, and in some cases they were. I remember one of the bills was, it was a transfer in disguise.
Oh, really?
We want to make it to where the state, because currently in Wyoming, we have a no net gain on state land. In other words, there's a certain amount of land and the state land office can buy or sell up to 10,000 acres above or 10,000 acres below that line.
Uh-huh.
Some people don't understand that's the way it works in Wyoming. Originally, Wyoming had 4 million acres of state land, and they sold 700,000 acres of it.
Okay.
And people put their foot down, you know, as far back as, I don't know how many, 30, 40 years ago, people said, hey, stop selling our state land. And so they passed this legislation to have the no net gain. Well, there was a bill that came forward that was going to allow that no net gain line to move so that the state could acquire federal land.
Hmm.
And no, you're not.
Oh, man.
Because there was nothing in the legislation that didn't say they could sell it.
Yeah.
They could turn right around and sell it. So, and we had a great public lands rally in Casper. In fact, that's where I met Lantani for the first time. And he came down to speak, and I was elk hunting, and they knew I was here as a board member, and he sent me a message. You, am I going to see you? And I said, well, I'm elk hunting. And he, I said, I'm gonna see you. I'll make the time. And but my elk hunting was near town, so it wasn't too bad. And it was a big event, and there was a lot of people there. It really surprised me how many people showed up in favor of public land. It was great.
It's motivating, isn't it?
It is. Very much so. Yeah.
Well, that's exciting, Jeff. So is there anything on the docket right now as far as activities that the chapter has got going on that you'd like to tell our listeners in Wyoming about?
Well, we're going to have an event in Casper in August. It's okay. Late August, I believe. It's the 20th. I'm going to have to look. It's let's see here. I got my calendar. The 25th, I believe.
25th of August, okay.
And we're hoping to get a lot of people there. It's going to be in the downtown area. We're going to have live music.
Excellent.
It's going to be much like the beer bands and public lands that they just had in Lander.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so that's our next big event we got coming up. You know, I've had little meet and greets here in Casper. Boy, it surprises me how many people show up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I mean,
that's good.
Nobody wants to leave. Everybody just wants to sit there and keep talking and you know, talking about hunting public lands and things like that.
Oh yeah.
It's great.
I'm excited. We've got the Utah chapter is helping volunteer at the Total Archery Challenge down at near Salt Lake this coming weekend. And I'm going to be down there helping out at the raffle and doing some of the stuff down there. And I'm excited. I mean, it's not, you know, you're not going there. It's not a home and garden expo that you're going to, you know, I mean, everybody goes and talks about hunting and fishing. How hard could it be?
Yeah.
You can kill quite a few hours talking about hunting and fishing, no matter where you're at.
You know, our first year of doing things here in Casper, we had a full draw tour.
Oh yeah.
And Ty Stubblefield came down, and another local board member, Lindsay Stillwell, she set up a great spot, and we had a lot of vendors there. And I saw people I haven't seen in years show up at this, and nobody wanted to go watch the movie. They all wanted to stay out there and chit-chat and talk about things. It was awesome. It was great.
That is exciting. And
yeah.
So the events and everything, does the Wyoming chapter, have you guys got, I think you have an active Facebook page, right?
We do.
That's up and running. I mean, is that one of the best ways to have everybody keep in touch with the Wyoming chapter itself?
It absolutely is.
Okay.
You know, I've encouraged in the past, the Wyoming email comes to me, and a lot of people, you'd be surprised how many people send an email. I want to get involved. What can I do to help? And I encourage everybody get on the Facebook page, you know, and then you can see what we have for upcoming events. You can see when we're fighting something or when we're doing something, because we'll post it on there.
Excellent.
And it's a great way.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, good. I encourage all the listeners from Wyoming and want to be a part of this thing. So yeah, let's point them to the Facebook page and to point them to the BHA website at the Wyoming chapter and get their memberships paid up and join in the fight, because might as well join the chapter of the year, right? If you're going to join any of them. Right?
Did I lose you there for a second?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, I said if they're going to join any chapter, they might as well join the chapter of the year.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, that was a proud moment for us. It really was.
I can imagine. Well, yeah. Jeff, I definitely appreciate you taking the time and sitting down with me and hashing out a few of the important stuff that's going on in Wyoming. Is there anything that you'd like to add as a finishing note to all the listeners?
Well, no, just keep on keeping on. I mean, you know, it took me years to find a group like BHA, and we need to grow it and just keep doing what we're doing.
It's many hands make light work.
Yep.
Well, thanks again, Jeff. I appreciate it. And if anything ever, you know, pops up in the future, or there's any issues that you guys want to cover that are pressing, you know, by all means, let's get together and do another podcast, and we'll do what we can to help you guys out.
Absolutely, Corey. Thanks a lot for this. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, Jeff. We'll talk with you a little bit later.
Okay.
Thanks.
Take care.